KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, presenting a new 2025 Corolla with classic styling and offering up to 41 mpg, Toyota Safety Sense 3.0, and more. See your Toyota dealer for all Corolla options. The San Diego County Toyota Dealers, we make it easy.
Welcome in San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. On today's show, we're talking about the efforts to revitalize San Diego's Chinatown to preserve heritage. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. Our celebration and exploration of AAPI Heritage Month takes us to San Diego's Chinese community, which has a long history tracing back to the 1850s. In fact, San Diego once had a bustling Chinatown. That area is now the Asian Pacific Thematic Historic District in downtown. But my next guest is working to bring greater awareness to the history of the Chinatown that once existed there. Jacinta Wong is the former executive director of the San Diego Chinese Historical Museum. Jacinta, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So before we talk about the district, let's talk about the initial waves of Chinese migration into San Diego. What drove that?
You know, I don't know how many people are familiar, but, you know, there are records of Chinese being here in the North Americas as early as the 1500s, actually. And there were initial waves of Chinese that came due to circumstances, whether it be famine, war, strife, from southern China as early as the mid-1800s. Then in 1848, obviously, most people are familiar with the gold rush. And, you know, in 1849, there were about 300 Chinese that were that came to the United to the States or to North America. And by 1852, there were over 20,000 that had arrived to these shores. And so they came looking for a better life, looking for opportunities. And then in 1865, the Transcontinental Railroad work began, and they often found work there. And so that's kind of how the Chinese started coming to the California areas, right? They landed in what areas like San Francisco. And so they were here. And as time passed, you know, whether they, you know, failed out of the gold rush due to, you know, racism or just lack of gold, or the Transcontinental Railroad was completed, they started moving south. So what they realized is that the redwood trees of California made for wonderful junks, which were the boats that they were used to using when they were in China. In southern China, many of them were fishermen or farmers, right? And what they realized is that the coast of California was teeming with, you know, fish and abalone, which was a huge delicacy in Chinese cuisine. And so they came down here in search of that, and they were good at it. And so they made their life fishing for these, you know, this delicacy and being able to transport it and send it back to China. So they were able to do that.
What does abalone taste like? What kind of fish is that?
It's a shellfish.
Oh.
So like it's like conch or, yeah. And I've heard tales from people who've grown up here in San Diego that up until like the 1960s, you could just go to the beach and literally just pick up an abalone to eat. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, so they came here, and you know, at that time when in the they started doing the California Southern Railroad project, and so they did bring a lot of Chinese down due to their work with the Transcontinental Railroad, and they hired them here also as well for their expertise in railroad building. So there were a number of factors that brought the Chinese down to San Diego, and you know, if you can imagine, you know, mid-1800s there were, I don't know, maybe 3,000 people living in San Diego at the time. Several hundred of them were Chinese, you know, brought down by the company. And they were just looking for a way to sustain themselves and make a life here in this country.
Wow. So then how did downtown San Diego, or what we know as downtown San Diego now, become this community hub for Chinese immigrants?
Well, I think that, you know, we think of it as being able to have all of the Chinese in one place, right? And part of that was racism. They didn't want the Chinese living in different areas. So there weren't a lot of people who wanted to live in that area. It was kind of the area known as the Stingery District back in the day. So the red light district. So brothels and drugs and prostitution and all that kind of good stuff. And so they forced them to live in this area. However, what they didn't realize is they then fostered a sense of community, right? Where you found people who spoke the same language, who followed the same traditions, who held the same beliefs, all living together and found a way to support one another. They were blocks off of the harbor at that time. So Third Avenue was where the harbor was. And, you know, you had no convention center back then. So where the convention center sat was really a fishing village. And so the Chinese were able to do their fishing. They were able to live in that area. You know, it wasn't the best area, but they were together. And then there was this whole push with the missions to evangelize the Chinese. And so the churches gathered, you know, the Chinese there, and they offered to teach them English and offered to teach them how to live in this country. And so they were able to gather together and learn how to live here.
How was that received?
I think for the most part by the Chinese, it was helpful. You're talking about only males being allowed into this country, right? So a bunch of, you know, Chinese men, they have no family, they have no support. Being able to gather together in a unified kind of way to learn English and learn how to survive here. I think it was well received, and the Chinese were open to evangelization at the time. And so, it worked out well.
Did it come at the expense of any of culture at all?
I don't think they were thinking of that, to be perfectly honest. I think they were just looking for survival at that point, you know, and trying to figure out how to survive and how to send money back home or bring over their family for more opportunities. Like I said, there was war, there was famine in China. So they were just looking for chances.
Yeah. Well, we actually have a clip from Amy Lee. She's a docent at the San Diego Chinese Historical Museum. And in fact, she actually grew up in San Diego's Chinatown during the 40s and 50s, where there were markets and restaurants and Chinese language schools. Take a listen.
When I went into Chinatown, I became somebody completely different than, say, I was at school. And it was interesting because I'd go to my regular American school, and twice a week I'd get on a bus and go down to this school. And so it was completely different atmosphere. And personally, I think it kind of made me sort of proud because I had this different culture that some of the other people didn't have.
Wow. It was such a hub for culture and an area that was bustling. But Jacinta, you know, San Diego's Chinatown, it sort of dissolved over the next few decades. Why did that happen?
So part of it was Chinese were not allowed to become citizens, right? Then you had some immigration, like the Exclusion Act that passed, which severely limited and curtailed the arrival of new Chinese immigrants. And then you had the inability of folks to be able to survive, right? And so there were a couple of different factors. There were things such as the Scots Act, right? So the Chinese fishing industry was thriving, and others weren't as happy to see the Chinese thrive like that. And so the Scots Act basically said if you go more than 3 nautical miles offshore, you can't come home. So, you know, that killed the Chinese fishing industry, right? And so the Chinese were trying to look for other ways to survive. They often became houseboys, which is often portrayed in the movies, cooks, you know. They were very influential but they were very involved in the building of the Hotel del Coronado. They were really good with the land. Like, so they were involved in, like, the Sweetwater Dam building, the irrigation system that San Diego has. So they found work outside of the area. And so the Chinese dispersed. Once the Chinese Exclusion Act was lifted, they looked for opportunities. And so they did disperse to other parts of San Diego. And, you know, because they weren't able to own land there, they were able to spread out.
And in telling this history, you're referring to just the men. And earlier you mentioned that. Tell me about the women and why they weren't ashore as well.
Women were not really allowed to migrate to the United States. There was a lot of complaints, unfairly so, I think. But, you know, oftentimes the females that were brought here were enslaved. And so they worked as prostitutes, right? They were seen as the evil, you know, doe-eyed kind of temptress. And so they were often unwelcomed. It was very, very difficult for any man to get his wife in. It would cost him a lot of money. They would be, you know, stuck in Angel Island for months, right, answering questions, proving that they were actually married. It was just very, very difficult to get women into the United States until closer to the mid-1900s.
Mm-hmm. That's a big stigma.
Yes.
In your experience, how can having, you know, a central community hub like Chinatown help shape one's understanding of identity and history?
I think that having a centralized Chinatown has often been seen as a way for the Chinese to be able to celebrate and incorporate their cultures and share it with folks who are of like mind. And so, as we talked about in January, having our Chinese New Year festival, right, is one way for the community to come together to celebrate a shared narrative. But, you know, unfortunately, San Diego doesn't have that. We are very lucky that, you know, things have change to the point where we do have things at least like the Convoy District, right, where we have the Asian Business District. While it's not a centralized Chinatown, you know, we want to talk about how Chinatown moved from the Asian Pacific Thematic Historic District to the Convoy area, beginning with, you know, merchandisers. There was a Chinese store by the name of Wujichan Kim Wing, and they moved to the Convoy area as some of the first businesses there. And so they helped drive some of that traffic to the Convoy area and help establish it. But yeah, San Diego doesn't have the Chinatown. I'm from Chicago. We have a huge Chinatown. San Francisco does too. But I think it's just different waves of populations and the timing of how the Chinese arrived to those, you know, areas that really shape those narratives.
Mm. Well, and City Council actually approved a master plan for the creation of the Asian Pacific Thematic Historic District, and that was back in 1987. How did that get started?
You know, there were a lot of Asian communities members who came together in a unified thought to try to save this narrative, right? To save the Asian Pacific Thematic Historic District's narrative, because it wasn't just a Chinatown. Although Third Avenue was kind of the unofficial Chinatown, there were, you know, the Filipinos and the Japanese and even African Americans who all were forced to live in those areas back in those days. And they, you know, were able to interact and live together in peace and harmony. And so there were all these organizations there. I think, you know, I'm very familiar with the narrative of council member Tom Hamm, who was, you know, very influential in, you know, back then in helping develop these narratives. But there were also, you know, members from the Japanese community, the Filipino community, Bennett Pedgy, who helped build the Convoy sign, helped do the design for that master plan as well. And so there was an intention, I think, from the city to kind of recognize the history of the San Diego that once was. And so they did do that master plan in the 1980s. However, due to resources and funding and administration changes and things like that, the money didn't happen. And mm-hmm. So there are very few nods to the APHD that still exist. We have the street lamps, for example, on Third Avenue that are Asian-style street lamps that are supposed to designate that area, which have slowly been eroding, which is one of the projects that I'm really passionate about, making sure it doesn't happen, mm-hmm. that they don't disappear. You know, you've got the sidewalks that have the multicolored tiles. We just recently installed a new mural on the intersection of 3rd Avenue and J Street, which is absolutely beautiful, that was done in cooperation with some local Asian artists, and Downtown San Diego Partnership and CCBA and the museum all got involved in trying to make sure that this was able to be done so that we can recognize the area, because the nods to the district are so subtle. that most people don't even recognize it.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. I mean, you know, a lot of work goes into preserving the culture into that area. So, I mean, do you feel like the district is losing its cultural identity at all?
Yeah, I definitely think. I think there are so many native San Diegans who don't even realize that we've had a Chinatown here ever, unless they interacted with that area before the 1970s. They probably don't even know exists.
Hmm. Well, here's Amy Lee again on preserving this history of San Diego's Chinatown as a docent and participating in the museum's Oral Histories Project in 2019.
Somewhere they want to make sure that people know there was really a Chinatown down there and there was really real people that were there and really lived and survived for quite a few years. And, you know, for many different reasons, they left the area and they just don't want us to forget all this. I think that's the main thing that I feel anyway. That's why I'm doing it.
You know, it's so important to preserve that history and it's, you know, for so many reasons. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Sure, absolutely. I think that San Diego oftentimes, you know, depends on whose voice is being heard, right? And they capture, you know, as pieces of San Diego's history. I mean, San Diego's it has been around for a long time, right? But has only recently, you know, really become a hub that it is. And so I think that there's many people who, for lack of power or lack of awareness, there's a lot of history that's lost, you know, whether it's, you know, the Harlem of the West that used to exist here, right, or the Chinatown or the Filipino town. Like, there's just so much history that is not captured in, you know, in San Diego history. I know the San Diego History Center has a lot of information, but not as much as it could have. And so, you know, we want to figure out how do we make sure that these histories don't get lost to the ages.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that makes me think of, you know, this moment in time where, you know, from the highest office in the country, there's almost an anti-history agenda. Has it made it more difficult for you to preserve this history?
I think obviously funding has a lot to do with it. You know, we are very, very grateful that there are, you know, nonprofits out here like San Diego Foundation and, you know, the Prebys Foundation out here who are here to help us with those kinds of things. But we really, really want to make sure that the people who were involved in these things earlier on are starting to age out, right? Lots and lots of history has been already decimated. And so we want to make sure that whatever we can find, whatever we can engage with, that we recognize it and can build upon it so that it doesn't go away forever.
Right. Well, last time you were on the show, you talked about, you know, how you feel like many AAPI communities are more spread out across San Diego. How are you continuing to build those connections and bridge those gaps between different communities?
Yeah, I mean, the Asian community here in San Diego is about 17% of the population, right? Although the Chinese are more dispersed, I mean, we're probably about 10% of that 17%. But that we have such a strong history with the Filipinos and the Japanese. We want to be able to bring them together. So I am also, you know, working in conjunction with the San Diego API Coalition to bring together the networks of all of the different API communities and to make sure that we're sharing these histories and these narratives with the young folks, right, and getting them engaged, community gathering. You know, we're really excited about bringing folks together to have these conversations.
You know, is there anything else that you've learned about local Chinese American history and community that surprised you or maybe something that's really resonated with you?
I think for me, what is interesting is that I never realized due to the long standing immigration of Chinese here to San Diego, that many of the, you know, because I'm second generation, right, that third and fourth generations are much less connected to their Chinese roots, right, and their traditions. And so, you know, being able to share my passion with them about the longstanding history here. I'm very proud of being able to kind of reignite some of that passion and bringing together folks, because I think that, you know, it's things that they don't think about, right? They've taken it for granted that we just don't have a Chinatown and that's just how it works. And I'm like, no, that's not how it has to be. We do have this little piece of this puzzle and it's recognized by the city. We should be fighting for this, fighting to keep it alive.
Well, the work has got to be gratifying when you put it like that. Absolutely. You know, and you mentioned you grew up in Chicago, you're second generation. What got you into learning about your own roots and family history?
I think that my parents both came here for college from Hong Kong. And, you know, in Chicago, like I said, we have a vibrant Chinatown community. And my mom was central to really helping make that thrive in the 70s, 80s, 90s. She was the founder of a nonprofit social service agency called the Chinese American Service League, which brought forth social services to Chinese Americans for the first time ever in the Midwest. And it's now one of the largest social service agencies for Asians, I think, in, you know, the area. But she was also influential internationally, right? So I know that the senior housing that the CCBA does here, Senior Gardens, was based off of a senior housing that my mom did in Chicago. And so, you know, being able to grow up in that community and to see how the work of a few people who are, you know, passionate about whatever it is that they're doing can make a difference is really been my, you know, my goal, my guiding star.
So you got it honest.
I sure did.
Well, we've talked about your efforts to preserve the district and this history at large. What are your hopes for the future of the district and beyond?
I mean, my hopes are that we are able to really engage the city with making sure that this identity of the district doesn't go away. I think that the goal would be to see how we can get it more widely recognized, how we can make it more vibrant, how we can make downtown more vibrant. You know, I think that the different districts are kind of siloed, and I think we could work together. Like, we're so much more powerful working together, right? It's not, you know, the Chinese versus the Japanese versus the Filipino versus the African-American versus Gas Lamp versus Marina, right? Like, we all need to work together to make San Diego the best city it could be.
I've been speaking with Jacinta Wong, former executive director at the San Diego Chinese Historical Museum. Jacinta, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Fleet Science Center's newest exhibit, Survival of the Slowest. See firsthand how nature's smallest, slowest, and weakest creatures can not only survive, but thrive in the wild. Open May 24th through September 1st. Learn more at fleetscience.org.